This is Focus, highlighting the 40th annual Newfoundland and Labrador Folk Festival and events of the Newfoundland and Labrador Folk Arts Society on VOCM.
Welcome to this week's show. I'm Greg Smith. Coming up July the 5th at the Arts and Culture Center in St. John's, the Newfoundland and Labrador Folk Arts Society presents Arlo Guthrie live. He's our focus today and joins us on the phone next.
Riding on the city of New Orleans, Illinois Central, Monday morning rail. 15 cars and 15 restless riders, 3 conductors, 25 sacks of mail. All along the southbound Odyssey, the train pulls out at Kankakee and rolls along past houses, farms, and fields. Passing trains that have no name, and freight yards full of old black men, and the graveyards of the rusted automobiles. Good morning. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Dealing card games with the old men in the club cars. Penny a point, ain't no one keeping score. Pass the paper bag that holds the bottle. And the sons of Pullman porters and the sons of engineers ride their father's magic carpets made of steel. And mothers with their babes asleep are rocking to the gentle beat, and the rhythm of the rails is all they feel. Good morning. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done. Nighttime on the city of New Orleans. Changing cars in Memphis, Tennessee. Halfway home, we'll be there. Mississippi darkness rolling down to the sea. But all the towns and people seem to fade into a bad dream, and the steel rail still ain't heard the news. The conductor sings his songs again, the passengers will please refrain. This train got to disappear in railroad blues. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Joining us on the phone this afternoon, Mr. Arlo Guthrie, how are you making out today?
I'm doing really good. We've just finished a year and a half tour, and I've been off the road now for about 2 weeks, so I'm just sort of crawling back to normal.
You're going to actually be here in Newfoundland and Labrador in St. John's in about a month's time, Mr. Guthrie. I got a couple of things, though, that before we talk about the show that I'd like to ask you. Huge fan of your music, and a number of things really come to mind when people talk about you and your music career. A couple of things, maybe, you know, I think it's safe to say arguments may happen about what you're best known for. Some people will say it's Alice's Restaurants. It's 50 years old in just about a year now. How did that song come about, and what does that song mean to your career?
Well, it's actually 50 years old about a year ago from writing it. The record came out a couple of years after that, and so I started writing it in 1965, in the fall of 65, and it came out as a record probably around the fall of 1967. So we've been on a tour that was commemorating that anniversary, and that was a lot of fun. And it came about simply because the events that were going on at the time were, you know, pretty horrific for a lot of young guys. And we were enmeshed in overseas adventures, and a lot of people didn't think that we should be doing that. And so I was one of them, of course. And my circumstance was such that I was able to avoid that adventurism simply because of the bureaucracy that was surrounding the events that are described in this song. So, I mean, for me, it wasn't a big deal. It was just a sort of monologue about what had happened to me. And honestly, I think it happened to, you know, tens of thousands of other guys who were about my age. And so what resonated, I think, was just the truth of the circumstance. And, I mean, even to this day, it has put me in a unique position of having played some small part in those times. And I think any truth to authority statement is valid, I mean, and holds up over time. So I think that's what happened.
Did you expect it to be so well received when you released it?
I had no idea, of course. I was a kid. I'm 60-something now. I don't know, 69 by the time I get there. And so I was very young. I mean, I was 18 when I started writing this thing. And so, I mean, I had no idea that it would become popular, essentially because back in those days, radio stations, which were the only means of communicating music, we didn't have internet, we didn't have, you know, other iTunes or stuff like that, of course. And the only way that people heard music was through the radio. And radio in those days pretty much prohibited playing anything that was over 2.5 minutes long. And Alice's Restaurant was close to 20 minutes. So there was no way that it was ever going to get played on the regular radio stations. However, at that time, we were switching from what we used to call AM to FM. And most of the people that were involved in the FM emergence were, you know, college stations, places where they weren't so restricted. And they began playing that. So I had no expectations that it would ever get any airplay. And honestly, it really didn't. I mean, it got played, like I said, through the college stations and other formats that weren't so restrictive. And it also was available in record stores, because we had record stores in those days. You know, those are pretty much gone now.
Another piece of your career, Arlo, that really solidified you as a folk legend in many eyes will be Woodstock. Can you tell me a bit about, I guess, your experience of Woodstock through your eyes?
Well, I could, but it would take a while. and then I would have to be making it up, because nobody who was there can actually remember it at this point. I think the most important feature of that event was that it was completely, it was unknown. Nobody knew what was going to happen. It was a normal big concert event, like a festival kind of thing that went on for 3 days. And everybody expected that, the promoters especially, expected that they would make a return on their investment because maybe 50,000 people would show up. And to have so many more than that, I mean 10 times that, show up was completely mind-blowing. And what they did was that I remember, because we got there on the first day of that thing, and there were already 50,000 people inside, and they hadn't even opened the gates yet. And they said, what are we going to do? And they said, well, we don't have any alternative. We just have to make it free. We have to open the gates, and because everybody's already in. People had just, you know, pushed down the gates and walked in, and by early the morning of the first day, there was already 100,000 people in there, and they thought, oh, my God, what are we going to do here? And so they made it free. And that would be the equivalent today of some insurance company or something like that saying, for the well-being of our constituents here, we're just going to make insurance free for a year. I mean, they wouldn't do it. Nobody. I mean, that would be so mind-boggling. But that was what they did. And I think that's one of the reasons we're still talking about it, because the feeling they created by doing that gave everybody the incentive to not just get along, but to make the best of it and to take care of each other and to do all of those things which followed, which means having a great time in a disastrous format with mud and rain and, you know, everything going wrong. There wasn't enough food. There wasn't enough water. There wasn't enough anything for anybody. But everybody made the best of it because the spirit of the event had been set by the promoters, who said, let's forget about the profit. Let's just get everybody in safely and out of here safely. And the rest followed from that. And we probably, you know, I'm one of those people who think we need a little more of that in the world. And, of course, all of these promoters that made that decision, they all made their money back anyhow with the records and the movies that followed. So everybody ended up happy in the long run.
Coming in from London, from over the pole, flying in a big airliner, oh, chicken fly everywhere around the plane. Could we ever feel much finer? Coming into Los Angeles, bringing in a couple of keys. Don't touch my bags if you please, Mr. Customs Man. Guy with the ticket to Mexico, no, he couldn't look much stranger. Walking in a hall with his things and all, smiling, said it was a long touch my bags, if you please, Mr. Customs Man. Feel much finer coming into Los Angeles.
Focus, presented by the Newfoundland and Labrador Folk Arts Society, will return in a moment on VOCM.